Dave Thomas is the chief coach for the Longman Soaring Club. He's flown pretty much anything that will get airborne, so has extensive experience of flying cross country. In this podcast, he talks about his love for flying on blue days, i.e. when there are few or no clouds around. He has used his cross-country flight from the Malverns on the 10th of April 2010 to illustrate some of the thermal sources and triggers, and also what decisions you need to make when you have no clouds to guide you. He refers to a number of places over the back of the Malvern Hills, and if you would like to get a better idea of the terrain and how his flight worked, you can download his and my track log from the podcast page at www.judithmall.net.
Basically, I've got a very positive mental attitude about blue thermal flying, or flying when the clouds are very thin, weak, haze domes and the like. And this all started when I used to fly hang gliders and specifically sailplanes. And I used to fly sailplanes at Bidford Gliding Club on the edge of the Cotswolds, usually when it wasn't windy enough to go hang gliding. So if it was a light wind day and it was going to be thermic rather than ridge soaring, then I'd go to Bidford and I used to fly their club aircraft, which more often than not I used to get the K8, which has got a glide angle of 25 to 1, and you can actually fly it down to about 30 knots, in fact quite slow for sailplane. Not really that much different to a high performance class 5 hang glider these days. Quite often, I used to be able to get the gliders rather than having to wait for hours and hours because people didn't like flying in the blue. And they'd go up and they'd all fly around for 20 minutes and they'd land again or something like that. And I found that I could take off, and it was always aerotow, so you'd go to 2,000, sometimes 2,500 feet. You'd get dropped in a thermal and fly around, and you'd climb up to whatever the inversion height was, and then it would sort of peter out, and you think, where do I go now? Oh, I think I'll go and fly to another little village. And around there, it's very flat land, quite a bit of quite damp land, because it's below the Cotswolds. And the triggers were little villages, sometimes with only half a dozen houses, sometimes slightly bigger. And I found that I could quite happily fly all afternoon, flying from one village, climb, fly to another village, climb, fly to another one, climb, and then go back to the first one, by which time the energy in the surrounding fields or whatever had built up, and there was another thermal working. And because it was light wind days, you just basically had to park yourself over the village, gradually sinking at 100, 150 foot a minute, and then all of a sudden, oh, you're back in a thermal and up you go again. And this worked really, really well. And I thought, well, hang on, this is actually quite good. Because I could fly for hours when most of the people were sat on the ground not bothering. And it seemed really easy to me. I've often had problems in the past with hang gliding, especially on cloudy days, where I thought, oh, cracking climb, looks under that brilliant cloud. Get there and there's just nothing but sink. You think, well, this doesn't seem to work very well. Obviously, I've been timing flying in cloudy conditions wrong, and I've been going to the wrong clouds and so on. Whereas on blue days, everything's hot, so all you have to aim for is the trigger. Find a thermal source that's big enough, that's dry enough, and then find the trigger, and then sit over it or downwind of it, depending on the wind strength or whatever. Seems to work a treat. I would say that I've generally been far more successful on days like that for flying when other people aren't even bothering. A good case in point would be last weekend at the British Club Challenge at the Malverns. I was free flying and the hill at Kettlesins was absolutely packed. And as you know, there wasn't even room to lay out, let alone take off, for many people. But quite a few had gone. I think there must have been at least 20 people left as I actually walked up the hill. So it was quite obviously thermic and doable. People were very high. People were well above the hill. And I heard at least two people say, well, I haven't even bothered taking my kit out the bag. There's no point. And I'm thinking, what? It's absolutely brilliant. You don't want to be stuck parked in them in ridge sawing and struggling to take off because it's too windy on launch. Thought, well, okay, it's going to be a bit, you know, you take off at the wrong time and you might go down. But get up and it's absolutely going to be brilliant. And it was. So that proves the point, from my perspective, that people have the wrong attitude. For some reason, they've learnt that clouds mean thermal, and therefore no clouds mean no thermal. And my perspective is it's probably easier. I would say, if you look at some of the books, Sailplaning and Burkhard Hardin's Thermal Flying, where he describes the hexagonal rule, I think it is, where you've got clouds dotted around in a sort of hexagonal fashion. Therefore, you can go along a street and you get to the end of the street and then you've got to go diagonally across and you have another little street and so on. I would say that's probably more likely accurate on a blue day, so you can't see them, than on the average cloudy day. So, but basically that's where I got the idea that I could be confident that it was stay-upable.
I mean, I have to say, I've not thought, well, if there's no clouds, there's no thermals, but I've always thought that if there's no clouds, it's more of a lottery. And that's always been my, you know, it might work, it might not work, but it probably won't work kind of thing. And that's been always my hesitation that, you know, I just don't know where it works, so therefore I'm not going to succeed as much.
Right. There you go. You see, if you've ever watched Chicken Run, in Chicken Run, the cartoon, the farmer tells his wife that the chickens are organised and they're planning to escape. And she says, the chickens aren't organised. It's all in your head, Mr. Tweedy. It's all in your head. And in actual fact, it is, because you've already condemned yourself to thinking that it won't work, even though you know that it's thermic.
Mm.
Now, I think that taking off on a blue day, especially if there's not much wind, is much more of a lottery. Because if there really is no clouds, you don't know if the inversion is going to stop at 300 foot above the hill. And I've seen that quite regularly, usually at the Malverns, because it tends to be blue more often than not at the Malverns around here, when it's easterly and it's fairly dry air. So getting up is more difficult, obviously, on a blue day, I would say, because you can't see the clouds coming over and you can't say, in 5 or 10 minutes the wind is going to pick up because you've got a cloud above. And the other thing to bear in mind, that clouds very often are completely disconnected to what's going on in the ground, because that cloud has formed from some thermal trigger that might have been 5-10 miles upwind, and there's not necessarily any relationship with the ground. I mean, a thermal that's actively going up, so it's sort of in the mid-level layer in between the ground and the cloud, is obviously sucking energy up. And you can quite often see that if you've got lots of gaggles of people dotted about, and you'll find that people will climb from different locations and then they'll all coalesce, and you'll end up suddenly, after 10 or 15 minutes of thermaling, with everybody all of a sudden in the same gaggle flying together, heading towards cloud base or inversion level or whatever, because that thermal is sucking everything up, so everything is drawn towards it. But the clouds can obviously confuse the matter, and they can also then shade the ground, which then turns the thermals off in most circumstances. Well, it turns the thermal source off, doesn't turn the trigger off, it's turning that energy off. So the things that I looked for, I think probably a good example would be for me to actually walk you through my flight last weekend from the Malverns, Now, I'd actually set a goal, so I texted my goal flight in as 50k to Hay on Wye, because all the forecasts all said it was going to be smack on easterly, and there wasn't a lot of wind on the Malverns, and there was virtually no cloud, so you couldn't really tell what the wind direction was. And then when I got up, it was initially slightly easterly, but certainly from the second climb onwards, which was at Ledborough, it was anywhere between northeast and north-northeast. And there was Jeff, yourself, me, and a few other people that all climbed out together. And I think we got to cloud base. I can't remember, actually.
Just short of cloud base. Yeah. It was the second climb we got to cloud base.
Right. But those were some of the first clouds that had really been forming decently. Up to then, there hadn't been much, and there wasn't a lot afterwards either. But I led the dive to the next climb because I knew that, from bitter experience, getting past the hills just to the northeast of Ledborough was a bit of a sinkhole. So I wanted to get beyond those hills, because I believed that those hills would be the trigger for anything that warms up in the lee of the Malverns. And I could see there was the next gaggle downwind were happily circling quite high about north of Ledborough by about 2 miles. And I thought, they'll have picked the trigger up from that bank of small hills with trees on. And I thought, I've got to get past there. So I led out, and I was expecting to actually pick something up underneath where all the, I think there must have been about 10 gliders, I think, in front of us, there's loads of them, all quite high. But in actual fact, fortunately, I was starting to get a bit low. I was probably at about, 12, 1400 feet, something like that. I picked something up just as I was going over those, only a few hundred yards beyond that small range of hills. So I thought, absolute guarantee, there's your trigger. Because the trigger can pick up the heat from either side, because you get a thermal that comes up from the east side, which is pushed up the hill, and then leaves the hill because the hill starts going down again, so it has to go up. And then it will suck up anything warm on the other side, and you've got that huge area of glasshouses. And I'm a bit dubious about whether glasshouses are actually very good. I've flown over them before, not very low, they never seem to do anything for me. But anyway, I thought that was a possibility, and I picked something up, and I got a good climb, and then you came in and a few other people. But eventually we all climbed up, and the gaggle that had been in front of us and above us, eventually the majority of them actually joined us, because we were climbing quite well in a stronger core, and they were up near cloud base, and by then it had obviously got quite weak, and so they actually joined our strong bubble. And I got briefly up on the north side of the cloud and then headed off again. I went round this cloud about 20 or 30 foot above the base of it, but round the edge of it, and headed off downwind, roughly towards Much Markle, approximately. And I was thinking, this is a bit dubious, because to be honest, you've got this gentle sort of nothingness sort of ground with no obvious big triggers. I picked something up. In fact, I think you ended up being in front and picking something up. And there was also a gaggle to the south of Ledborough, which I thought was too far away for me to get. But anyway, we ended up, there was about six of us, and we climbed very slowly, and very slowly headed towards the north end of the Much Markle Ridge. And I think there was a bit of nobody wanted to go first at that point. And I think we all probably stayed in that thermal for far too long when it was hardly working at all.
But that the climb that you just described a minute ago, that was like the last proper cloud, really. After it, it was just wispy yes. bits that you could see were building and then decaying just as quickly. Yes. And so I think at that point everybody went, okay, so it is a blue day. And that's when everybody started to kind of power down a gear and kind of go, somebody else find it for me, you know, somebody else go. I think that was the problem. That's the transition from it being a cloud day to a blue day was the sort of wake-up call to a lot of us.
That's a very good point. It's something I hadn't thought of as what was going on. I did think at the time, oh, come on, somebody blooming go. I don't want to be the first one to blooming go again. I knew where I was going to go to, but I didn't want to be the first one to try it in case the rest of the gaggle found it because they were higher and then got away, and I didn't want to go down at that point for a short distance. So I didn't want to go, and I think everybody else was thinking the same, but I wasn't worried about it becoming blue. Basically, what I knew then, Brian Hindle has told me from a flight that I'd done to the north of that ridge before. He says, in between the Much Markle ridge and the River Wye, to the north area, there's sort of a big hollow where there's like great, there's banks of trees by the Wye on high ground, and then there's this hollow, and then the Much Markle sort of ridge. And he says that's the best place to go because it gets heated up and it works really well and it triggers well. He says if you're getting over towards the southeast of Hereford, go there, don't stay in the valley. So I thought, well, that's working. We weren't going that way because of the wind direction. I thought, I know where I want to go. I want to go on the downwind southwest side of the Much Markle Ridge, because the Much Markle Ridge climbs very gently for about 2 miles, very gently up to the tree line from the east heading west. So you've got all that ground that will be well in the sun, and then the wind will be gently pushing any hot air up it, and then it will get to that tree line and go, oh, I've got nowhere to go, and it will have to actually form a thermal. Can't do anything else if it's warm air. It's got to form a thermal somewhere, and they'll obviously coalesce somewhere. So my plan was that I was going to fly broadly along that somewhere and pick something up. It's just I was a bit dubious about doing it on my own. Anyway, I got to just to the northwest of the organic farm at Much Markle and picked something up and climbed with it, and that was really nice. And then I thought that was drifting nicely, and I think there was about 5 of us in there then, roughly like that.
Mm.
And you led off, and I thought, you've obviously seen something, because we were heading close to the River Wye, and I thought, the River Wye isn't a good place, because at that point the River Wye is very close to the high ground to the east of it. So it's not going to have, the wet, cold river isn't going to act as a trigger, because it's got no energy to build up. The bank of trees might, but not the River Wye. And then I thought, you've got really low, flat ground, that there's nothing much to trigger it, apart from one of those huge, big oxbow-type wiggles in the river, just north of Ross and Wye. And I thought, I really need to hang this out a bit longer before I can get over. Because I knew that I flew last May, very similar routes, and I knew that the ground gets higher to the west and southwest of Ross and Wye once you get away from the river, so that was going to be better. I thought, I want to hang this out. Anyway, you went, and I thought, oh, and then you disappeared into the haze, and I thought, you must have got up, and I haven't seen you land, and I was looking like mad. But you haven't landed, you were low, but I haven't seen you land, so you can't have landed. Then 2 other people went, and they scratched around, and you could see the one guy, he was turning and turning, twisting and everything, and he wasn't landing, and I thought, well, there's something working down there, but obviously not good enough. And then the thermal started really fading a bit, and I thought, I'm going to have to go because I've started losing height now. And then I looked, and I could see that a good distance away, I'm not quite sure how far, probably 2 to 3 miles, you'd got one of the big bows in the river. Immediately to the downwind side of it, or approximately downwind side of it, you'd got a bank right next to the river, lots of trees on it, and then it looked, I wasn't 100% sure, but it looked like the ground fell away afterwards slightly. And I thought, put those two together, it's got to be a trigger, because you've got, there was two big ploughed fields right in the middle of the bow of the river, and various green fields upwind of it. So I thought, well, that's going to get hotter. And then as soon as the air moves, it's going to hit the river. So it's not going to like that either. And then if it gets over the river, still attached to the ground, it'll hit this tree-lined bank. And I thought, well, it seems moderately windy. So if I can get onto that bank, I mean, I can go up and down it, and I might get something. And if I don't, there's nowhere else to go, and I'll just end up having to land on top of it if I get too low. Because there was nowhere, I don't think there was anywhere to land at the bottom by the river, not very easily. And I thought, well, if all fails, it's only a short walk into Ross on Wye to catch the bus. So I thought, well, it looks the best spot for getting picked up or getting a thermal. And I thought, and I looked around, I scanned, and I thought, nothing else is happening. You could see some bits of cloud dotted about, but it really close. And I thought, I don't want those bits of cloud anyway, because they'll be too late. So anyway, got there, got a climb which was really weak, and I was drifting quite quick, actually, because it was so weak. And it was only when I got to, I don't know, 2,500, 3,000 feet, I suddenly got into a nice core and got up quite quickly, and got to 4 and a bit, I think it was. And then I thought, it's going to be another quite long glide before the next ridge that I could use as a trigger. And there was a few farms dotted about. There was nothing that looked really obvious that would work at height. So what I actually did do, I saw there was a cloud not far away, just more to the south. And I thought, I'll go and try that, which is basically what I did. So I went over towards this very weak looking cloud. I didn't really get much at all. So it proved the theory that the clouds, it's too late. That is when the very best of the thermal has pushed through all the weakening air high up near the inversion. And it just didn't work very well. In actual fact, thinking back to inversions, when I actually got just slightly above the cloud over Ledborough to the side of it, I popped my head through the inversion, and God, the visibility just suddenly was transformed, and you could see these little lumpy clouds dotted away for miles heading towards Wales, just dotted about everywhere. Very difficult to judge the distance back, virtually impossible probably. But you could see them dotted around. And I thought, I bet you can hardly see them from underneath. Anyway, that only lasted probably 30 seconds, and then I was back into the hazy murk at the top of the inversion. But it showed it was working everywhere. We weren't going into a dead hole. So what I then did, that didn't work very well, although I got a little bit. And I basically carried on, made sure that I went exactly downwind, which was handy, because I didn't want to go close to the River Wye, anyway near that, so I wanted to go downwind because I knew there was a couple of very small streamy rivers and they'd got ridges. And my concept again was not the fact that the ridge was ridge sawable because they were very shallow on the north side, but the fact that any warm air that gets over them, the south side was steeper, and therefore if there was any warm air it would have to break away, and that seemed to work basically, and got another climb. And then the very last thermal, it was getting towards half four by now, and it was starting to get very, very blue, and very murky as well. And I thought, well, I'll be landing soon if I'm not careful. And it looked an awful long walk away, and I thought, looked at the map and I thought, if I can get to Raglan, I've got a much better chance of getting a lift there, because there's bound to be lots of pilots coming back from the British Club Challenge at Panda, so they'll be driving home, and I'm bound to get a lift. So I thought, if I can get within walking distance of Raglan. And there was a small ridge, and I thought, I'll just about get over that with a few hundred feet. And I could see some smoke on the south side of it. I couldn't see what was forming the smoke, because I was too low to see over the ridge. But I could see it, and it was like wiggling about, going in funny directions. And I thought, well, that could be just rotor, or I think something's going on. So I thought, well, that's where I'm going to go. I'm going to go to the smoke, because it's probably not a trigger. The smoke isn't a trigger, but at least it might mark it a bit better. So I went over, and I was sort of a bit disappointed to start with, because I went a good few hundred yards over this ridge, and it was quite steep on the south side, covered in trees. And I thought, oh, there's my landing field, about less than a quarter of a mile away. There's another one there I can get to. And then all of a sudden, the glider went whoa, 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 all over the place, and literally had this whole mouthful of smoke. And I looked down and I thought, well, that smoke's like 400 foot beneath me or something, so there's got to be a thermal here, because it wouldn't have come up here otherwise. But I didn't find it, and I did a few turns and lost a couple of hundred feet. I thought, well, that was a bit of a dead loss. And then while I was doing that, I was looking around, and I saw some seagulls, and they flew onto this field where I was due to land, and thought, well, hang on, that one started turning, and that other one, that seagull has started turning. So I immediately diverted from going exactly downwind to the corner of this field where these birds were circling, which was adjacent to a farmhouse, and got over it and started going around in zeros or thereabouts. And I went up 20 foot, down a bit and up a bit and so on. I thought, well, I've got a big dilemma here, because the next half a mile there was absolutely nowhere to land. There was lots of ploughed fields that I didn't want to land in. There was cropped fields, and there was lots of trees, and there was bumpy ground and everything, and a few houses, and I thought, I don't want to land there. So I've got the decision, I've either got to work this and get past that, or just come out of it and land in that field. And I thought, I'll carry on for a bit until I get the decision that I can't head back into wind and land at that field. And then I was going round, drifting reasonably quickly actually, because the wind had picked up quite a bit by then. And I thought, well, this is actually working. It might develop into something, but at least it seems reliable that I'm not sort of in and out of it all the time. So I carried on, must have gone around 20 times or something, and then saw Raglan Castle come out of the murk, and I got all excited, and then gave up on the idea of thermal. It just shot over there and landed next to it. it just looked so magnificent, because it's a fantastic castle. It's like a real proper castle, with the red dragon, the Welsh dragon flying from it. And I was sort of like seduced by the castle and went and landed by it. Because that was my goal, you see, because I put it in my head that if I could get to Raglan, I'd get a lift. So that was it. And as I got a bit nearer, I could see there was loads of cars in the car park. And I thought, oh, I'm sure I'll be able to wander around the car park and blag a lift. Unfortunately, by the time I packed away, the castle had shut and all the cars had gone. It didn't work out quite as planned. But it shows that I'd got myself a goal that I had to get to Raglan, therefore I had to work the thermal. And then when I realised I'd got to Raglan, oh, forget about this thermal that was quite happily drifting me along, not losing any height. And I'd drifted for about 2 kilometres by then. And it just went out from me, Ed, and I thought, no, that'll do. On the basis, I think, that if I'd have lost it, I might not have actually got to the castle, because the drift was taking me to the side of the castle, and if I'd have lost it, I might not have got to the castle. So, it was my head suddenly, I'd just got this single channel, get to the castle, that's my only goal. So I actually flew away from a very, very weak thermal. I'm fairly sure I wouldn't have been able to get up on it. But having said that, If I'd have gone another 2 kilometres, it would have gone over Raglan village itself. And that may have been a trigger that would have actually given more energy. And I might have got another thermal, and I might have got to Usker, and who knows? But never mind, I was happy with what I did. But it shows that two things. One, that you shouldn't give up. You should carry on looking as long as you've got somewhere safe to land until you're very low. And you've just got to carry on looking at what's going on all the time. And then this problem of a single channel, there's my goal, ooh, let's go and land there, I've reached it.
Several times when you were describing your flight, you were saying, you know, I knew that the ridge rises gradually, and I knew this was here and that was here. How important do you think actually is knowing the terrain when it's a blue day?
I would say it helps, but if you've got a map and you've got the opportunity to look at it, it does show to some extent, it shows the contours. It certainly helps if you know where you are, because I knew that I didn't want to go too far south because I'd be heading into the sort of flat Y valley area. And the problem with a Y, once it gets south of Rosson Y, is the fact that it was almost parallel with the wind, which would just be probably very likely just a big sinkhole. So I knew I didn't want to get by the Y, even though it would make getting retrieves much easier. But that's just a general map reading thing, I would say.
Well, how important do you think terrain is on a blue day?
Very important. Absolutely critical. It's probably just as important on cloudy days. It's just that people's focus is more affected by the clouds. And the big problem on a cloudy day is that what you think is going to be a trigger happens to have been in shade for the last 20 minutes by the cloud streak to your south, and therefore when you get to the trigger you're dead as anything, so that can completely offset all your plans, all your thoughts. Whereas on a blue day, assuming that a large area of the countryside is approximately the same heating and it's not a different air mass, because if you're entering a different air mass everything changes. Therefore, you may end up going into an area with a much lower inversion level, things like that. It could massively affect stuff, or sea breeze. So the terrain, I think, is really important, but you've got to put the terrain versus the wind direction, put the two together.
When we started talking, we were saying about, you know, people's perception of a blue day and, you know, sort of psychologically, it's easier to fly from cloud to cloud. Usually, on light blue days, people head for the hills. You know, they try and get to high ground because I suppose that, like myself, I sort of think, well, okay, if there's no clouds and it's blue, then at least I've got these big mountains. You know, it's going to be easier to identify where I can get up. I think the combination of what is actually a fairly flat area with no clouds actually really provides sort of some psychological barriers to a lot of people, including me. And what I was going to ask you about is, if you don't know the terrain at all, when you're flying from somewhere like the Malverns, when you're at 4,500 feet, it looks flat.
The ground itself flattens out, but the thing that doesn't are rivers, roads and hedgerows and trees. You'll find on very, very flat ground, everything is fairly symmetrical. In other words, fairly straight roads. You've got, if you've got a forest, it could be a square forest, for instance. The fields tend to be more squarish. If you go to an area that's more bumpy, you'll find there'll be little rows of trees along the side of a road, and the road wriggles about a bit. And the road won't wriggle about a bit unless there's contours, not in this country. That almost, well, more often than not, it wiggles about because there are some contours and the road is tending to follow the contours a bit. So there are always things to look for anyway. And when you're a bit lower, you can then start looking for shadows to see if there are any shadows from any high ground. Or just where groups of houses are and things like that.
So what are your preferred triggers then on a blue day? Or do you have a preferred set of triggers? What are the things that you go for first? What are your primary triggers and what are your secondary triggers?
I would say the primary trigger is gently sloping ground that goes up to something that suddenly drops away. That is probably the best. Rather than a steep hill, it's a shallow hill with a steep backside of it. It doesn't have to be more than 50 foot or something. There's a huge amount of lucky blue flights I've had, I suppose. But I would say I've been lucky with picking thermals up massively more percentage-wise. It's not like a 50-50 chance. I would say my success at finding thermals has been much greater than 50-50.
You mentioned haze caps to me before.
Yes.
And you said that on a blue day, look for haze caps. So right. Can you tell me about what haze caps are and how they work?
A haze cap is very difficult to see from the ground, becomes increasingly easier to see as you get close to the inversion. And if you can actually get into a haze cap itself, you just enter this wonderful clear air world and you can see all the other haze caps. And they literally look like a little shallow upside down soup bowl of hazy air. Not quite a cloud, but just thick, dirty, grubby air with a bit of a white tinge on top, sticking out of this flat layer. Now, I haven't seen that much on a paraglider, but I used to manage to do it on a sailplane quite often. And the reason for that is in a sailplane, there's two ways you can get actually above them. One, they've got a much lower sink rate. So the thermal can be weaker close to the inversion, and you can work that 130 foot a minute air and climb at 30 foot a minute sort of thing. So you can get right to the very, very top, whereas we're at a disadvantage. And the other thing is that if the thermal's reasonably strong close to the inversion, what you can do in a sailplane is increase your circling speed, and then literally, as you get to the top, you just pull up, convert your speed to height, and you can literally pop out of the top of the thermal, the very top of the thermal. And when you do that, you can then eyeball where all the others are, and then think, there's one over there, and it doesn't look too far away. And then you can think, right, well, that's sort of in that direction. And then as you sink down, back into the murk, you think it's over there. So you're sort of heading in roughly the right direction to where the next haze cap is. What a haze cap is, it's a thermal that is currently working that isn't strong enough with moist enough air to form a cloud. If it was really strong moist air, it would push up through that inversion and probably form a cloud. I mean, the haze caps of being thrown sailplanes, you're only talking of a few tens of feet at most. But when you get probably within a 1,000 foot of the inversion layer, if you look carefully, you can see them. You see what looks like a thickening of the murk. But it's almost always a thickening of the murk that's very symmetrical. Whereas you see a lot of the clouds, like the clouds we were flying last weekend, they were all weird shapes, weren't they?
Mm-hmm.
They weren't nice round clouds. But the haze domes always seem to be round. In other words, just like if you look in one of the gliding books and it tells you with a format, the formation of a thermal, and it's a round bubble that's rotating. It just looks like the head of that. And I think what happens with clouds is the moisture spreads out, and it spreads this cloud out, and then it might have little mini cores in it. So the physics of a cloud is different to the physics of a haze dome. And when I've successfully climbed up to them, you end up thermally fairly tight, and if you go a very short distance away from them, there's nothing at all.
Okay, so have you got any other advice that you've gleaned over the years of flying in Blue Days that you can share?
In inversions. We were flying and basically, presumably due to an inversion, I found that at a certain height, 2,000-3,000 foot or something, it suddenly got really rough and I had to work really hard and concentrate not to fall out the thermal or even get frightened. And then you suddenly get through it and find that the climb is actually in a significantly different direction because the air is actually quite materially different and it's got a completely different direction. And one of the things to bear in mind when you're planning a sort of where your next climb is going to be on a blue day, you've got to think, right, I'm at, let's say, 4,000 or 5,000 foot or whatever, you're going off on a big glide, you've got, I don't know, 7 or 8 kilometres to glide to where you think the next climb might be. And you think, right, the wind is northeasterly, let's say, here. But you've got to be looking at anything that's on the ground that might be indicating that the wind is a different direction when you get down there. Because by the time you get there, you might only be 1,000 foot, and you might have gone through an inversion that wasn't particularly obvious, and the wind direction could be 30 degrees off from where you are, and the net effect of that is you're going to fly to this thermal trigger, and you think, right, there's my little village, and I want to be southwest of that village. But then you suddenly find that the wind is actually northerly. So if you sit on the southeast corner of that little village, you've actually missed the thermals that are triggering, probably only by a few hundred feet, but sufficiently to just be in any sync, and then completely miss it. So you have to be thinking about what the wind direction is doing at different heights. Now, one of the big advantages is having a flight computer or a GPS that you are actively monitoring what your airspeed and ground speed is. Well, more particularly your ground speed, really, because on a paraglider your airspeed is changing dramatically, even if you put the speed bar on. So look at your ground speed, and like my exo trainer, it will tell me the wind direction while I'm in a thermal, because I'm going round and round, and it needs you to fly in a circle for it to work out what the wind direction is. But the trouble is, when you leave the thermal, you're in completely different air. And after a couple of minutes of gliding, it then decides it doesn't know what the wind direction is. So the only way you can then do it is monitoring what your downwind airspeed is as you're gliding in your chosen direction and think, that seems to have slowed down a bit. Maybe the wind direction's changed. And then you get lower and you think, well, hang on, I've got even slower now. What's causing that? You know, massively slower rather than just slightly slower. And you might find that the wind direction is significantly different. Going back to your question about triggers and what's the best thing, it's you've got to look for what's a good thermal source. So you're looking for dry ground, anything that's drier than wet, recently cropped, fields that are nicely growing and very bright green. So anything other than that. Then look for slopes that are gently going up and then sharply going down in the direction you want to fly downwind, because that's where they'll break away from. And then park yourself downwind of that breakaway. Failing that, I would say small villages, but small villages where there's nothing much else going on. In other words, if you've got a little village that's surrounded by pretty boring, uninteresting, flattish fields, so it's just a question of looking for those things and hoping, really. And if you get to one that you think this is it, don't leave it, because if you think that is the only trigger for a mile or more and you're starting to get low, you ain't going to get to anything else until it's too late. So you might as well either bomb out there, or you'll get your decision making is accurate and you will find that that climb.
Thanks, Dave, for your time and valuable advice.